Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin for a new edition of the Capital Ideas Podcast. In unscripted conversations with investment professionals, you'll hear real stories about successes and lessons learned, informed by decades of investment experience. It's your look inside one of the world's largest asset managers. New episodes are available monthly. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Invest 30 minutes in an episode today. Published by American Funds Distributors, Inc.
The FT.
Welcome to World Weekly with me, Gideon Rachman, in a week where international affairs are once again dominated by events in Egypt. The Financial Times' Michael Peel is in Cairo and has been watching events unfold there over the past week. I spoke to him earlier today and said that Friday, the day we were speaking, had been billed by the opposition as the day of departure for President Hosni Mubarak. So how are events panning out?
Well, it's actually been much calmer than the previous 2 days so far. Dusk is approaching in Cairo. I was out in Tahrir Square earlier and the mood was good. It was relaxed. There was a mix of demonstrators, mostly men, but also some women, some families, some children there as well. The streets didn't have the same feeling of tension and threat that they've had over the last couple of days when there have been a lot of President Hosni Mubarak supporters out in the streets, especially at certain locations. So that's all felt a lot better. We did see a small pro-Mubarak group, probably only maybe a couple of hundred people marching past the hotel, but away from the square rather than towards it. And you know, also it was different in intensity from last week, Friday, where after Friday prayers, everything kicked off. And that was the cue for pitched battles between protesters and police, or rather protesters marching on police lines and the police unleashing a ferocious response of water cannon, tear gas and rubber bullets. That just hasn't happened today. There are no police on the streets. The pro-Mubarak violent faction has pretty much disappeared. Isolated reports of stone throwing in one or two places, but nothing like the previous couple of days of rocks, Molotov cocktails, gunfire and all the rest of it.
Now, you've been, as you say, watching this for a week in Cairo. A lot of the early commentary focused on the idea that this was essentially a leaderless opposition. Is that still the case, or is it a more coherent movement now?
Well, the opposition parties are talking among themselves and are clearly still sorting out a position. And of course, one of the things about this this uprising is that it didn't emerge from an opposition party. It was triggered in part by bloggers, by activists online. But then, of course, that doesn't go anywhere near to explaining its intensity. And that clearly has tapped into many broader feelings of discontent. And one theme of the last few days, particularly today, has been that people really still, those who are protesting against protesting for the immediate departure of Mr. Mubarak, many really don't have a clear idea of what will happen next, and people have different ideas about changing the constitution, dissolving the parliament, different ideas about how a transition might be achieved. But one thing that they are united in still, it seems, the protesters at least that I spoke to, is a desire for Mr. Mubarak to go at once, even with the warning he issued again yesterday that the country would descend into chaos if he left. And one protester said to me today, well, you know, it already is chaos. The stability argument just doesn't work anymore because of what's happened, and especially the intensity of the last few days with the violence unleashed by some supporters of the president has left people feeling that it's just not satisfactory. His promise to step down when elections are due in September. But as to what comes next, there's still great uncertainty about that.
You say the opposition are kind of talking amongst themselves about how to handle this situation. Is there any sense of a more organised or united front on the part of the pro-government forces? Because again, it seems from the outside a bit mysterious. You'll get hints of a crackdown, the unleashing of the pro-government forces on the streets, then they mysteriously withdraw. You'll get Mubarak making statements about, you know, wanting to fend off chaos, but also saying, well, he doesn't really want to stay on anyway. And then there's the big question of what is the army up to? At times it seemed to veer towards the demonstrators. At other times they've been accused of being complicit in the violence. And is it correct, you think, to think that it really, in this situation, it's the army that hold the key?
Well, certainly people who know the country well say that they play a very important role and that their position is crucial. And one of the striking things since being here over the last 10 days has been as you say, the sort of shifting perspective one has on what the army are doing. They arrived on the streets last Friday to a hero's welcome, and on the streets outside Tahrir Square, you had people waving at them, cheering at them, climbing onto tanks to give soldiers kisses because they felt the army is, you know, the honest broker. It's on the side of the people. They're not like the police, who, of course, are despised and feared as agents of the regime, as many people see them. But then, of course, when the violence from some of the pro-Mubarak factions started up, the army didn't seem to want to intervene, and there was a strong sense that it was hedging its bets, perhaps, about which way the situation would go. And then, you know, moved into another phase yesterday where there were some reports of soldiers, maybe even acting as individuals rather than institutionally, intervening to stop violence by pro-Mubarak mobs. But then other reports suggesting that they weren't intervening. And now yesterday, outside the National Museum, I saw the army deploy between a front line of a makeshift barricade set up by anti-government protesters and a pro-Mubarak faction. But then later in the day, they disappear. So they have flitted in and out of this conflict, and, you know, their position is still really not clear. And clearly there must be all kinds of talks going on behind the scenes, both politically and, one would assume, involving the army as well.
Okay, last question, Michael, and it's a brief reply because it's in a sense it's unanswerable, but I guess and we have to be clear that we're talking as events are moving. But I suppose what I'd like to ask is that at the beginning of today, a lot of people did think, you know, this is going to resolve itself quite quickly, either in a horrible, violent way, or Mubarak will go. Do you think we're now looking at something which might well be much more protracted, take weeks?
I think that is certainly a possibility. I think that if you look at the last 10 days in total, the lesson is that you see two sides who ultimately have been very reluctant to give ground, resisted giving ground, even when under intense pressure. And that goes for both the protesters when they were under siege, and it also goes for the government side, with Mr. Mubarak repeatedly saying he won't stand down, with the counterattack by some of his supporters this week. So I think that any prediction that this will definitely resolve itself soon would be foolish. It may, but equally a very messy, protracted outcome to this, I think, is also very possible.
That was Michael Peel in Cairo. Well, just across the Mediterranean from Egypt, but a world away, lies the European Union. And EU leaders had a summit going on as events were unfolding in Egypt over the weekend. So I asked our correspondent at the summit, Josh Chaffin, if European leaders' debates were being dominated by events in Egypt.
Absolutely. The summit was nominally supposed to be the first ever EU summit dedicated to energy policy, but it's more or less been overtaken by Egypt. And there was a statement, much of the lunch was spent dedicated to discussing Egypt, and there is now a statement from the 27 heads of governments that has come out.
What are they saying?
They're basically echoing the same kind of calls that you've had from the U.S. and in the U.K. in the last week. They're calling for an orderly transition process towards a democratic and broad-based government, and they're also calling for political reform and not repression.
Wow.
I think one of the most interesting parts of the communique is a fairly bland bit of language where they just mention the terms of a bilateral agreement that the EU struck with Egypt in 2004. And what they seem to be doing is making an oblique hint that about 100 to 150 million euros a year in aid that the EU gives to Egypt for democratic reform and economic reform and so forth, that it could be at stake if the government doesn't follow through with some of these demands.
Now, my memory of EU summits is that one thing that the Europeans specialise in behind the scenes is kind of self-flagellation about how badly they're doing. And there has been commentary that Europe has been pretty well absent from the discussion. Everybody's very preoccupied by what role Washington's playing, but Brussels doesn't seem to feature. Is that a concern?
I think it is. I think there's certainly an acknowledgement here that there's perhaps limited leverage or influence for Europe. Some diplomats have said, you know, this is probably a case where the U.S. will have more influence. If you look at the amount of money at stake here in this association agreement, it's, you know, what, 100 to 150 million euros a year against more than a billion a year in U.S. aid. So I think there's on the one hand, there's probably less leverage on the European side. And, of course, you have 27 leaders and you have people making errant comments or people certainly with different points of view. Silvio Berlusconi on the way in today sort of undercut the EU message by praising President Mubarak as one of the wisest men and suggesting that there should be or could be continuity in the government. So it's the usual EU challenge of trying to get everybody on the same page.
That was Josh Chaffin in Brussels, ending this week's World Weekly. So until next week, goodbye.
For more downloads, go to ft.com/podcasts.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin for a new edition of the Capital Ideas Podcast. In unscripted conversations with investment professionals, you'll hear real stories about successes and lessons learned, informed by decades of investment experience. It's your look inside one of the world's largest asset managers. New episodes are available monthly. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Invest 30 minutes in an episode today. Published by American Funds Distributors, Inc.